Hello, and welcome to Climate Emergency Manchester, or CEM for short. I'm Simon.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Adam.
It's the end of July, and the last month of summer scrutiny for the councillors at MCC. That's not to say we'll be putting our feet up. Though the machinations of local democracy go on their hollybobs in August, we'll be here to keep the fire burning till autumn. On today's podcast, we'll take a look at Greater Manchester's draft clean air plan, active travel, and the city's climate change framework 2.0. On top of that, we'll cover some poor behaviour from health scrutiny and even poorer infrastructure delivery at Great Ancoats Street. If any of these are sounding familiar, it's because two of them have been reviewed and redrafted within a matter of months since their first launch. We're trying something new this month. Instead of a single podcast to cover all the council's operations, we'll split them up into a few smaller segments for you to listen back at your convenience. Or feel free to make a pot of tea and listen to the lot in one go. And remember, if you're not quite following the terms we're using, episodes 1 to 3 are explainer podcasts. 3 minutes in each introduce scrutiny, carbon budgets, and some of the key players in the journey to zero carbon by 2038. Lauren and Adam, shall I start with the clean air plan?
Yeah, that sounds like a good place to start.
Bit of context then. This has been proposed as launching in May 2022. Signs went up everywhere, ANPR cameras. Clean air zone coming soon, then May 2022. And it's been shelved and being redrafted since January this year after some pushback from residents over the charging model, which we talked a bit about in episode 5 last month of scrutiny. The redrafted proposal has come to scrutiny this month as a draft, and then it will come as formally adopted in September with any feedback from councillors. All quite a short amount of time, quite like the last time it came to scrutiny. The redrafted proposal is for a non-charging model, advising and educating people to accessing funding to change their cars. And the report that the councillors reviewed focuses on key areas of pollution that breaks legal limits for nitrogen dioxide. The report focuses on key areas of pollution where air pollution is exceeding the law. And then they've looked at the types of vehicles that are using those areas where air pollution is breaking the law. And the significant majority of polluting vehicles, air pollution emissions came from buses. So the whole thing seems to hinge on, it's okay, we focus all our efforts on electrifying our buses. That'll take away, in some cases, up to 75% of the emissions. To be clear here, we're talking about air pollution and not carbon. And in the meantime, we'll use the clean air zone to persuade and signpost for people to upgrade their cars to compliant vehicles as and when they can afford to do that. And there is some funding to help them do that.
Yeah, they're referring to this as investment-led rather than...
Nice buzzwordy.
Yeah, rather than non-charging, I think. Well, maybe they do use that phrase as well, but from what I gathered, it was very much investment-led model.
Yeah, it does sound like quite a bit of jargon there. Just to be like, what does it mean, investment-led? As in, like, are they going to give you some money to change your car? Or are they going to get some bankers in to lead you along the way?
Wouldn't a charging zone be investment-led? Because it would generate revenue that they could then invest in.
Ooh. That sounds like maybe they should look at that. I don't know. I think... There is a significant issue with there isn't enough vans and taxis that are low emission in order for all of them to change quite quickly. And it's a matter of whoever can afford it mm-hmm. wins out and can avoid the charges, and whoever can't afford it loses because they'll have to pay the charges. So I understand why, like, people are up in arms when potentially they'll be made bankrupt.
Yeah, I think we discussed this a bit last time, didn't we? That it hadn't really been properly thought through in that sense, the financial impact it would have on small businesses and charities and other kinds of organisations. Clearly, like, it would have bankrupted a lot of people. But is this really going to achieve anything?
Is persuasion really going to work? How are they going to persuade? I don't even think they thought through the mechanisms of how to persuade people beyond some signs wherever they come into a zone.
Interesting you say that, because we talked about in the last episode why, given the extra time they've got to 2026 to get to legal limits instead of 2024 as it was originally, why they couldn't now consider rolling the Clean Air Zone out to include private vehicles. We talked about that at some length. And what I noted in the report that was put to the Environment and Climate Change Scrutiny Committee, where this was reviewed, said it's clear that the GM-wide Clean Air Zone Category C, as approved in summer 2021, could lead to hardship in GM, as we've just discussed. And that implementing a materially revised charging CAZ, Clean Air Zone, for example, with a different boundary, vehicles in scope, or discounts and exemptions, would take time to design and consult upon and then implement. Can you put that into plain English?
I think it's quite not easy to sort of like translate that jargon. It's because I don't know what a Category C charging zone is or whatever else. But it sounds like what they want to do is review what they've already got in place because they've realised it doesn't work and it might not actually achieve what they think it was supposed to achieve in the first place.
What I've understood that to be, so that it's clear that implementing materially revised charging CAS, for example, with a different boundary, vehicles in scope, or discounts and exemptions, would take time to design, consult upon, and then implement. Basically saying, we don't have time to make major changes to this proposal because we didn't have time to fully consult and develop the idea in the first place. So it's been compounded by failure. We can't make a better policy now because we didn't spend the time making a good policy in the first place.
And so now it's easier to just not really do very much at all.
It sounds like an almighty mess.
For me, it comes across as the bare minimum. So of all the things that they could have looked at with a clean air zone, and I'll talk about carbon, why is carbon not being talked about here?
Well, they did try to bring that in as a recommendation at the scrutiny committee.
One councillor made that recommendation, sure. At the point of drafting a proposal that's getting rubber stamped anyway.
The day after, I think it was.
This has been a conversation that should have been happening from the very beginning, a year ago. Okay, the government's telling us we have to get our air pollution down. Well, we also know that about 25% of Manchester's emissions come from transport. Why don't we kill two birds with one stone and build something that works for both? That's not been talked about at all.
And I mean, this might just be me being cynical, but it could just be that the whole issue has just become so toxic that nobody really wants to touch it anymore. It just got a bit insane, the discussion around this. I think people are just over it and they want it gone.
Which is why they've now got a proposal which is just a warmed up rehash of the old one. Mm-hmm. They've taken out the controversial bit of we're going to charge you because people didn't like that, which doesn't bode well for the future if they can't even take criticism like that and explain their way through it. So they've just offered up and say, we will put in some electric buses and that will solve the problem. We're not saying we're going to do any better than we're going to stay within the legal limits of air pollution. We're not going to say we're going to try and go any lower than that. And we're not going to try and tackle carbon emissions either.
That's still above what I think WHO standards say is safe. And there isn't a safe limit for air pollution.
No.
It's just one that doesn't cause as much harm.
So none of this is, where could we get to? It's just, to me, this screams of bare minimum.
Yeah, thoughts? I think that's a fair assessment. But then we've seen controversy over things like low traffic neighbourhoods. And again, what do? They sort of default to bare minimum. It becomes toxic. They don't want to touch that policy any further because it's caused so much conflict. They've not tried to resolve that conflict. They've not tried to de-escalate. They've just, you know, sort of tried to put their flak jackets on, their helmets on, and sit in the nuclear bunker until things die down. And then they'll come with some watered down alternative that tries to placate the people that shouted loudest. Meanwhile,
but I think in areas where they've tried to implement similar things like Clean Air Zone and LTNs, after a while, it does kind of die down, but you have to hold your ground on it. And that eventually the people who are shouting will just shut up and go away. And they're generally well-liked. So it's just really disappointing that even with like such a massive majority, they just bottle it on so many things.
Yeah, I think there's definite parallels between what a Labour majority council will put up with or won't put up with in terms of significant sort of disapproval within an area, a significant vocal supposedly majority, but they're not necessarily. There's nothing to say they are. And they feel completely, it feels like any sort of criticism, they want to be popular. It seems more of a popularity contest, and they can't be seen to be unpopular, even though probably the people that they've upset will no longer ever support them again. So,
and that's a key point, which relates to the framework 2.0, which we're going to talk about in the next segment. That idea of the council being able to put things which are going to be controversial and see them through. So yeah, we'll talk about that.
They're obsessed with bringing everyone along with them
on the journey.
And that's important to an extent, but there comes a point of saying, well, this doesn't need to happen. Depending on what the thing is, they won't be able to compromise and back down on everything and meet their zero carbon target for 2038.
Whether that's clean air or traffic, low traffic neighbourhoods, or yeah, a whole variety of things.
Let's dive into how they propose to decarbonise those buses. Simon Warburton of Transport for Greater Manchester, he talked about how there are two factors really that make this electrification of buses possible, and that's additional funding from a UK government fund and the franchising of buses, which has just passed the final, hopefully, legal challenge. And that franchising is going to happen in three tranches, which was news to me, actually. The northwest of Greater Manchester in 2023, the east and northeast in 2024, and the south Manchester in 2025.
Which does make sense, North Manchester being sort of the least well-connected bit of GM.
And the south being probably the best.
Yeah.
On the particular issue of electrifying buses, the proposal was for funding that would electrify one third of the bus fleet. Now, Councillor John Hughes, Councillor for Gorton and Abbey Hay, conveniently popped up at this point because he's a retired bus driver, and he queried the amount of money in the fund being able to electrified that many buses, one third of the fleet.
Which was about, was it 125 million?
125 million was mentioned in the report. I think he mentioned 120 million. I'm not sure if that was just a mistake or whether we're looking at different pots
of money.
I don't
know how much an electric bus costs.
No, I can't say I do either. But he said straight off the bat, that's not enough money to electrify a third of the fleet. And the response was, no, you're absolutely right, it's not. What's happening is, as part of their sort of business as usual cycle, they would be replacing one third of the fleet anyway, and they have funding available to do that. This money allows them to increase and top up that budget so that those new vehicles can be electric.
But what I was interested in is who owns the buses, because it wasn't really clear. Does GMCO own the buses, or is this Stagecoach? So it's essentially, you know, whoever else the bus operator is.
It'll be under a franchised system. I think the way that it's going to work is those companies will still own all the buses, but GMCA will decide the routes and set the fares.
So they're going to give a load of money to a bus company to electrify their fleet. That's what it sounds like to me. It's like, we're going to give you some money so that you no longer have old chuggy buses that spew out nasty fumes, and we're going to give you some money for some nice new fancy electric ones.
I think we'd have to confirm that.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm not against that happening, but it's more the point being, this is a continuation of business as usual. They were going to replace those buses anyway, and now instead of them being internal combustion engines, they will be electric.
But I don't know who owns the buses. This is the thing. Is it a public asset? In which case, you know, invest, and therefore anyone who can operate it, whether that's a bus company or potentially in the future, maybe a publicly owned company, which is currently illegal.
I think my concern is that if it's, yes, it's great, it will be one third, and it will bring down air pollution, and they'll prioritise those areas where the air pollution is highest to make sure those routes go electric first, which is absolutely the right way to go. But it's not quite the radical, this is how we get to 100% electrified bus fleet. We're just going to be replacing them as and when we would have retired the old ones anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Isn't there a Chinese city that like has all electric bus fleet already? I think quite a big city as well, much bigger than Greater Manchester. I know they make the buses, so fair enough, it's a bit of a marketing ploy. But you'd think we'd be able to get more buses than that electrified.
And I guess this just becomes part of that. Again, we'll talk about it in the next segment, the framework. How radical do we want to be?
Or ambitious, yeah. as one of the councillors said.
Sorry, just maybe going off on a bit of a tangent here, but where they have measured the places where they have the most exceedances, how is it mostly from buses? Because you've got like the motorway cutting through the centre of Manchester, which is mostly private vehicles. And also like Princess Parkway is again mostly private vehicles. And it's got to be exceeding legal limits.
I wonder how much of their, you know, I think there's a lot of, false information saying air quality's fine in these areas, which I think is, they're just looking at maps that don't necessarily reflect traffic right now. There are only limited number of sites that have these NO2 diffusion tubes. So how many other areas are potentially breaking legal limits and safe limits, potentially harmful limits of NO2 that we don't know about, because they just don't have the sites.
Yeah.
And there isn't a sort of a network of citizens sort of monitors.
No, well, I mentioned Princess Parkway because earlier in the year when Hannah ran the health special online event, one of the participants was a local GP, and she'd posted a video on YouTube a few weeks before that where she had taken readings from around the Fallowfield Loop, which you would have thought, it being a bit set back from the main road, you know, kind of nice tree coverage, would be relatively low levels of pollution, and it wasn't. So I do just think, are we really measuring in the places that we need to be? And how much, I just don't buy that replacing our bus fleet is going to reduce the levels of pollution to a level that is acceptable.
I was heartened slightly by a couple of councillors, the chair, Councillor Shilton Godwin, Chorlton Park, I think.
Yeah.
Chorlton or Chorlton Park. And Annette Wright, Councillor for Hume. Both emphasising the importance of considering this issue in the round, not just buses, but other forms of transport, and also considering carbon emissions, not just nitrogen dioxide.
People living in Hume, like, must be so vulnerable to air pollution. I mean, there are houses that sit right next to the Ring Road.
Yeah, and Councillor Wright talked about Regent Road and how residents in her ward are affected by that, despite most of it being in Salford. So outside of MCC's remit, they need to work together. And she was making the point that work around that area has been done really poorly, and in terms of engagement with residents in the past, so they need to be really considered.
There's god-awful traffic at that roundabout, which took, I think, over 18 months to redesign, and it's made absolutely no difference to traffic whatsoever. Even though they put an extra lane in, surprise, surprise, and it's like, oh yeah, we increased capacity, and it's like, oh, there's still traffic here.
I wonder how many times that has happened.
Oh, great Ancoat Street.
We'll get to that.
In the last podcast episode, I put down my proposal if I were king, or, you know, emperor.
World king?
Sure, yeah. Or, you know, leader of Manchester City Council, for example. I would want a system of engagement using the ANPR cameras, the license plate recognition cameras, to engage people as to what journey they're doing, why they're needing to do it by car, what are the other options, and if none of them are available to them, what change would they need to be able to see to be able to get a bus or to active travel before they have to get in the car or use public transport. And Simon Warburton from TFGM, Transport for Greater Manchester, briefly mentioned the ANPR cameras and two potential benefits of using them within this clean air plan. That was to use them to identify targets for potential funding, which sounds close to what we were talking about last month, potentially, depending on how they do it. And also said that Greater Manchester Police are keen to use them to target crime.
Well, I'm not surprised. Like, APNR cameras have been used by the Met for years. And surprise, surprise, they don't have as many dodgy drivers in London as they do in Manchester.
Do we have statistics on that?
I don't know, but anecdotal, at least from a Londoner coming to Manchester.
We'll just take your word for it.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I'm sure GMP might have some stats. Yeah,
antisocial driving is a huge problem in Manchester.
So the government steer has been to the council that no decision will come before the new Prime Minister is in place. So this won't be moving until 5th of September at the earliest.
I did note the cackle of laughter when they said, when do you think you'd get a response from government?
What if we could have air pollution monitors around the city that then visualised what the air pollution was like at that point in time?
What, like those advertising boards?
Yes, exactly.
I think they do have air pollution monitors on them. Some of them do.
And then people could see for themselves just how much pollution they're breathing in and generating.
Bit like a carbon clock.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to... They want to change people's behaviour. Okay, well, how do you do that? You've got to get people to understand what the problem is and actually see it for themselves, but then also make the alternatives sort of accessible and cheap and easy to use. But this strategy does none of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of strategies coming out of Manchester that we've seen has this theme of individuals taking action as individuals, not actually trying to change systems. Even though they say we need to change systems, they don't realise that they have to change systems through actually making the good behaviours the easiest and cheapest, not necessarily just telling people you've got to do something better.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the easiest and cheapest at the moment is still using private cars or still doing whatever else it might be, consuming lots of carbon, it seems. Munching through carbon at far, far too great a rate.
Yeah. That's why bringing in charging without having sufficient active travel infrastructure, cheap and accessible public transport, which is never going to work.
And yet still not touching private car use. So
I think maybe they could look at firstly charging people that live in places like Cheshire coming into the city. Surely that should be a first step. Charge people from outside the city. And then you could start looking at charging others, you know.
Having a mechanism, a model.
Maybe having like a
charge.
City centre congestion zone. Haven't they thought about that? Like a, you know, a tight one around the city centre.
Yes, they did. And then they battered it off saying it's far too complicated to do anything other than the one we've already planned.
How? You can't drive into the city centre if you've got a highly polluting car.
Or you get charged for it.
Yeah.
And that charge goes to subsidise public transport.
I just wish they could have had a system that was flexible enough to be able to make change easily in future. For example, have a system that would allow for charging. Communicate that we have a model that will be used for charging when the conditions are right. Maybe have charges that are tiny to start with.
Well, like a, you know, it's like,
and phase it in.
The bag tax made a difference, didn't it? And it wasn't a massive one. When you start to charge, it's the same thing with coffee cups, actually, because if you gave people a discount, you got quite a low compliance rate associated with people bringing cups or potentially whatever else. But as soon as you charge, even the same amount, rather than giving a discount but saying we're actually charging for cups, funnily enough, people start bringing in their own keep cups.
Mm-hmm.
So just by saying we'll charge you more by doing it rather than giving you a discount, they actually change, you know, it goes from something like 13% to 50%.
It's a behavioral analytics term called loss aversion, I think, that this idea that if you give two groups of people a pizza each, one a margarita with no toppings and say add all the toppings you'd like, and another with a fully loaded pizza and say take off all the toppings you don't want, the group that have got a fully loaded pizza will consume far more calories because every single topping they take off feels like a loss. So yeah, use that in your design of a clean air plan.
That's following the science, surely. It's like, say, start doing it at £1 a day and say, like, this will get more expensive in the future, but we're charging £1 a day to make sure that this is, you know, this is just to say we are going to charge you. This will go up, but...
And that could be what the officers who are working on the plan behind the scenes might have suggested, but then it comes back to... the councillors who say, no, 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 that's political suicide. We can never do that.
And the same reason why they didn't apply it to private vehicles, they did a consultation. The consultation said, why aren't you applying this to private vehicles? And they said, no, it wouldn't get within legal limits in time. That was when it was 2024. It's now they've got two extra years. And now they're saying, it would be too complicated to go through all that consultation and redesign it. So we're just going to go with what we originally planned, but just not charge.
So do nothing, basically.
Bare minimum. I'm going to suggest that we move on to segment two, because we spent quite a bit of time on segment one. This is the moment for any listeners out there who maybe remember cassette tapes in the 1980s.
It's just the B-side.
This is the chime telling you to please turn over. We'll see you on the other side, where we're going to talk about some poor behaviour we think happened in Health Scrutiny Committee, and the major item of the Environment Committee, which was the Climate Change Framework 2.0. So come see us on the other side.